Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, and Dr. Katie Eastman. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories, with this radio show, printed magazines, websites, community, and more. And now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth and Katie.
Well, we've got Elizabeth anyway, but Katie is going to be along shortly here. We're having a morning of it. We've rescheduled our show here to 11 o'clock this morning instead of 1 o'clock because I have kiddo things to do today. But welcome to the Best Ever You Show, and thank you so much for listening. We are one of the top-rated shows on Blog Talk Radio with over a million downloads. And I'm just so pleased, and thank you so much for all that you do to listen and share our show around the world. We just are so appreciative of you all listening and supporting us. We have a beautiful guest with us today. We have Pamela Hale, who is the founder of Through a Different Lens. I am so excited to learn all about her and learn about her book that she has out called Flying Lessons, a cool, cool book. And Pam, I was commenting to Tricia last night that I loved the actual feel of the paper of the book even. it's a great book.
Thank you.
Yeah. No,
I do
welcome.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you do. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for being with me. We're going to, I'll wait for Katie. I'm not going to wait for Katie. I'm not going to, you know, sit in silence with you for a while while we're waiting for Katie. But Katie should join us here shortly. And let me just start by, this threw me for a loop. Just absolutely, how did you go from Stanford and Columbia to being a certified energy medicine practitioner, spiritual director, and meditator, or mediator? Because
I know it's been a, I have a checkered past. yeah, that may be my next book. It's an interesting journey.
That's a great name.
But I think the short answer is that I've really been on a spiritual path all of my life. And at a certain point, the church that I went to kind of didn't cover all the experiences I was having, nor did it really answer all the questions that I had. And so I was on a treasure hunt for other answers. And then, of course, in my more recent past, in the year 2000, I got cancer, which always wakes a person up and makes you look for a different way to heal. And so along with all the medical, wonderful medical treatments that were available for me that I'm sure helped save my life, I knew that since my grandmother and mother both died of breast cancer ahead of me, I needed to do more than those medical things. And so that's when I went to shaman school, originally for myself, not knowing that at that ripe old age I would be sort of switching careers.
What did you do prior to this, and was it tied in at all, or was it just a completely different path?
Well, I've had to look for the thread, and I think I do see the thread, but others might not. My master's was in education, and I went to Columbia, and so I started out teaching school. First, I did my student teaching in East Harlem, and then taught in the ghetto on the Lower East Side in Manhattan, which I compare to my military service. You know, it was when I really woke up to some of the suffering of the world and found out that I couldn't fix it all.
Yeah.
And then
hard,
I
isn't it, when you feel that way.
Yeah,
I feel that
it
way
is.
All the time. My whole life since I was little, I've felt that way. Just like that's what kind of Best Ever You is to do as much good as I can do in the world, because since I was an itty bitty kid, I've just always felt like frustrated that I can't do enough.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. That means you have a life of service, which makes it about more than you, and that makes it richer and fuller in my experience. So so then I went on to be a mom, and I stayed home with my children for some years. And during those years, I got a 35-millimeter camera and fell in love with photography. And so at first I was doing that just for myself, and then started taking every course
laughing.
That was available in my
laugh
community.
Sorry to interrupt you. I want to laugh right there because I know that I'm a mother of four boys. And
oh,
in your bio
wow.
here it says therapeutic photography.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that you were at home with kids, and that's your therapy, because it's mine too. When I have always just a funny, I'm goofy like that, and our listeners are very used to me being goofy. But isn't that a wonderful thing to have something where you can even involve your kids, taking pictures of them or give them the camera once in a while or whatever.
Right.
I mean, photography is so cool.
I ended up doing programs at schools, mainly public, but also private schools. I was an artist in residence for the Los Angeles Unified School District and did some programs with photography with them and in a nearby city, South Pasadena, and at some private schools, and even taught a college course to people who were becoming therapists and teachers about how to use photography as kind of a second language. And then I was lucky enough to do some work at a neurological learning center, which was for adults who had suffered traumatic brain injury. And that was a tremendous learning experience for me. I used photography to help them communicate because some of them couldn't speak,
okay.
some of them couldn't move, you know. And so I did all that, and I had an educational photography studio in Southern California. And then I went through a divorce, and I couldn't afford to do that studio anymore because I wasn't really making money.
Right.
And so it broke my heart, but I had to close that and pound the pavement and look for a job. And so my next chapter was fundraising, professional fundraising. I got a job with a nonprofit, an entry-level fundraising job, and I worked there for a year and a half, and then I got hired by my alma mater, Stanford, in their big fundraising campaign. It was the first billion-dollar campaign run by a university. And in that campaign, part of my territory was Arizona, and so when I came here to train volunteers, I met John Trakta, who was a man that I had known in school, hadn't dated, but we had known each other, and he's now been my husband for 24 years.
Aww.
So I ended up quitting my job, marrying my volunteer, and dragging my children, kicking and screaming, from the L.A. area to Tucson, Arizona.
How cool is that? How many kids do you have?
I have two grown daughters. One is 44, and the other one is 40.
Cool.
Will be 41.
That's how old I am. I'm almost 44.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you're like my oldest daughter, and so I have five grandchildren.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have four of them. So, Oh, what a cool story. Yeah, I can tell. I was so excited for you to come on the program because you are just so fascinating to me. I couldn't put your book down. To everybody listening, it's called Flying Lessons, and I was commenting to I don't know what to call them, the PR firm or whoever put us in touch, and saying, boy, I love this book. And I just signed with Hay House. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. This should be with Hay House or something. I was telling her all about Hay House and everything yesterday on the phone as we were kind of
Time you
today.
Signed to do your radio show with Hay House?
No, I have a book coming out in September through Hay House. I signed with Hay House in October of last year. And,
oh, wonderful.
It's so exciting. But when I was reading your book, I'm like, oh, this could be, you know, a great thing too. And I don't have ways to make that happen or anything. You have to make that happen. I don't know,
yeah.
Just press a button and sign everybody with Hay House.
It's
a brilliant
I tried that route, and yet, you know, here's something for listeners who might be thinking of doing their own book. I've been a writer for years, and of course, my dream was to have a big publishing house like Hay House sign me on, and I tried to make that happen. I worked with an agent, and nobody bought it. And so I decided to self-publish it, and the benefit that's come out of that for me is that I must say, when you said you love the feel of the paper, and I have 50 full-color, four-color photographs of my aerial photographs in the book, and so you're really getting a coffee table for the book for the price of a paperback.
Yeah, I was absolutely shocked when I saw the sticker on it that was that, you know, it's won an award. It's won the Independent Publishers Award. And my jaw dropped because I was like, wow, this is the best independent published book I've seen. And I get people sending me their books all the time.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
And everything. And it stands out. So kudos to you for taking the
time.
Thank
you. Well, and
really
that's a team.
Particular.
I had a wonderful book packager and a wonderful graphic artist. And so, you know, I learned a whole lot putting this together, but it became a creative endeavor for me. And as a photographic artist, that was very important to me, how it looked.
Yeah,
and so by self-publishing, it turned out that I got that.
Well,
so,
you know what? Self-publishing is genius, too. I have two self-published children's books. And
oh, wonderful.
They were prior to my Hay House everything. I published a book my goal was to publish a book when I turned 40, and I had been through the same process of rejection letters and everything. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try this. And I went on to Lulu.com and did my own thing, and it's Pinky Doodlebug is what it's called. It's a children's book, and it's got an error in it. It's got a rhyming error in it and things that I never would have known. But it won an award, and, you know, I love the illustrations.
Wonderful.
And I've loved both processes, you know, being with a self-help book. That's a little different than a children's book. The self-help book, I think, it needed the editing and the structure and the help from Hay House.
Yes.
And everything. I mean, they're really great. And then the kids' book, I'm sure it could have benefited from that, too. But, that, you know, it's fun to put the books out. So the book is called Flying Lessons. And I was wondering if that's your book, and I was wondering if you could take a moment and just tell us what that's all about.
Sure. Well, the subtitle is Flying Lessons, How to Be the Pilot of Your Own Life. So it is a self-help book, and it's a hybrid. It's part memoir as well. So the story part of it, the memoir part, is about me struggling to get my private pilot's license in my late 50s, and about all the fears and self-doubts that brought up, in spite of the fact that I had been working on myself my whole adult life and had been through lots of therapy and lots of, you know, personal processes. I was just stunned to see how many fears raised their little heads. And so that's why I thought it was such an important process, that even though my female flight instructor, Cleo, who's a central character in the book, and even though she would not call herself a spiritual teacher, that's what I call her, because the whole process became a spiritual lesson or a series of lessons. And so out of the hundreds of things that I learned, I picked 7 lessons that I believe are lessons for our lives. And so the whole book is a metaphor, and of course flight is an ancient and powerful metaphor for our soaring above our limitations, for our feeling freedom, for our feeling power, for our feeling joy. And so it's about how to fly in that sense in your life, and the 7 lesson process that can help you move past any challenge.
Yeah, I when I was reading through the book, one of the things that I found, and I don't know if you, I don't know how you're going to teach me here, how to talk about a book on air, how to talk about your own book on air. How do you talk about your book without giving it away so people still buy it and read it? So really clever. How do you do that? Because I would love to go through the seven different lessons, but you know, I don't know if that gives away the whole book to the point where
I don't think it does. I think it helps people realize, see how it could help them. Because I must say that this book has proven, you know, I really feel like it was like I had divine help with this book.
Yeah.
And so it has a lot of layers to it. And so, you know, in an hour interview, we can only touch the top layer. And if by touching that top layer and exploring what the lessons are and getting what the metaphor is on kind of a introductory level, if that helps people, then I love that in itself. And that also makes me hope that somebody now wants to know more. They want to get into it more deeply.
Yeah, I love this. I was almost going to say, well, I'll just talk to you on air about it, I guess. I was going to talk to you off air. But, you know, I almost want to have like a little book club on Best Ever You and have maybe 5 or 10 people buy the book, read it, and then maybe come back with a radio show or a Google Hangout or something that we do with you and discuss your book because to everybody
what
listening.
What a great idea.
Yeah, well, I think it might be really fun. And it's really hard to get people to go hit the buy button. You know what I mean? They support you, or they'll tweet you, or they'll, you know, they people support in different ways. But even family members, like my, in writing my book, my husband just finally read mine. You know, he's like, "Is it ready yet?" I'm like,
"Yeah, I know." I have a lot of people who are good enough to buy it, but then I don't hear them making comments that indicated that they've really read it.
Yeah,
and a lot of them have admitted that they really did. And in my book, the case of my book, it's a problem because it's pretty. So people will leaf through it and say, "Oh, it's just so pretty. I love the photographs," and then they put it down.
Well, I got to give you props there because it is a very pretty book. There's another. I almost want to. We'll keep going here with your book, actually, but I so want to connect you with Karen Walren, who wrote The Beauty of Being Different. You two are two of the most interesting people I've had on my radio show.
Wonderful, I'd love to be connected.
Beautiful books, beautiful photography, beautiful message, beautiful metaphors. I mean, just very cool. And Karen Walren is one of the coolest people.
Thank you, I'd love that.
I'm connecting on Facebook. All right, so now we got all that out of the way and we're a little disjointed. Sorry, but I wanted to say to you in a phone call before we had the show. Can you do us a favor and just kind of step us through Let me do this
because this usually works for people. So think of a challenge. All of us have them. Think of a challenge about which you would like more insight and about which you feel kind of stuck someplace, but you're not sure why. You're not sure where you're stuck. So just take a moment and think of that, and I'll think of one too. Okay, I got one. Do you have one, Elizabeth?
I do. I definitely do.
Okay. And later, you might think, Elizabeth, whether there's any part of it that you can share with me in the rest of the conversation, because then we can show people kind of how it works. But that's not necessary. But anyway, just think about that. So now think about your challenge with respect to these 7 lessons. And you'll know right away where your work needs to start. Okay, so lesson number 1, know where you're going to land. Lesson number 2, bring enough fuel for the journey. Lesson number 3, take the pilot's seat. Number 4, remember why you long to fly. Number 5, communicate with the controllers. Number 6, broaden your scan. And number 7, give way to the winds. So I suspect that most of you, and you tell me if it's true for you, Elizabeth, that you can kind of get the metaphor just from that, especially by applying those to a specific situation. You kind of get it on the surface level right away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe tell me what lesson, do you want me to say a little more about each of them?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think, pretend you're giving us a little talk because I don't usually have to do this.
All right.
I find you completely fascinating.
So know where you're going to land. What I mean by that is not so much where your destination is, what your goal is. It's more about what are you going to do if the engine fails? As a pilot, if something happens to the engine, you don't just fold your hands up and start crying and whimper all the way to your death like I felt like I would have to do. You start doing a whole bunch of different things to, A, try to get the engine started again, and, B, if it's not going to start again, you want to put the plane down safely in whatever terrain you're in so that you live through it. Okay? Mm-hmm. So in your life, in your challenge, most of us are not going to fly. We're never going to take off and fly unless we know that there's a safe landing space. unless we know that there's a safe landing. So, so knowing where you're going to land means if everything were to really fall apart around this challenge that you're facing, where would you go? So on a literal level, that might mean friends or family or a place or, you know, a person. But people have their own issues, and sometimes relationships change. And so using a person, even if it's your loved ones, as a safe landing space isn't always reliable. And so what we really want is to develop a spiritual landing place, a place inside us that is solid ground that no one can ever take away from you. And so if you have a faith, if you have a spiritual path, you're fortunate because think of that as your safe landing space. And if you don't have that, even if you're not religious, maybe for you your safe landing space is nature. But you want to pick something that's eternal that no one can take from you. So does that make sense?
Oh, I think it makes beautiful sense.
Okay, and each lesson, just to spend a little more time on number one, maybe then you know, we can go on, but we'll spend a little more time on this one because it's really the foundation for all of them. So there's a whole system, and I'm looking at a chart in the book in the back for you, Elizabeth. It's on page 203, mm-hmm. and it shows this system, that the seven lessons make a system. So each lesson has a challenge. Each one is related to a chakra, for those of you who know the chakra system. And there's a color associated with that chakra. And then each one is associated with an archetype that's part of the shamanic tradition that I learned. And each one has a gift, and each one has a yoga pose. So there are a bunch of ways to relate to the lesson. And you don't have to use them all. You can use the ones that make sense to you, that call to you. So for number one, know where you're going to land. The challenge is managing fear. Because I'll tell a little story related to number one. So I'm out practicing emergency landings with my flight instructor, Cleo, and I've had a very sweaty lesson, and I'm so relieved because we're on our way back to the airport, and now all I have to do is one regular landing, which doesn't feel so bad now, and then do a little debriefing with her, and then I can go out and get my iced latte, and so I'm ready. And so we're parallel to the runway, if you can picture that. We're going to do the landing pattern where, you know, you go along parallel to the runway and then you turn left toward the runway and then you turn left again and you're coming in on final approach. And as we're parallel to the runway, Cleo reaches over and she just pulls the power off.
Oh, thanks.
So now it's silent except for the pounding of my heart. And I totally freeze. We've just been practicing this. I've practiced this like six times, and she's just pulled another emergency on me, which, of course, I didn't expect. And no information is coming in. It is deer in the headlights. And so she says, Pam, your emergency procedures? And I go, she goes, Pam, where are you going to land? And not having any idea, I know I have to make up an answer, so I'm looking down in front of me. I live in the desert. So I'm saying, well, I'll land in that little arroyo down there. She looks at me just appalled and goes, you're going to land in the arroyo? I go, yeah. She goes, Pam, how about the runway? I mean, I want to die. It's right over my left shoulder.
Yeah.
But fear, you know, we have a fight or flight response to fear or a freeze response.
No matter who we
fear.
Are, too. You know,
no matter who we are.
Educated Stanford, Columbia, University,
it
person,
makes
you're still going to be.
No difference.
Yeah.
Fear is the tyrant who can have control over anyone, and it's not an intellectual process to manage fear. So,
how do you do that when you. Let's go back, for if I could, for just one second. And
yeah.
Go push flying away for a minute here and
uh-huh.
talk about cancer. Let's
uh-huh.
say you're sitting there and somebody says to you, Pam, you have cancer.
Yeah.
Now, where do you go to find
terrified.
Your landing path right there?
Yeah, great question. So it took me a while to find that answer for me. But that...
I hope I didn't say it like that either. You know, just a
well,
more
you
gentle
know,
in their approach.
Yeah, well, it almost doesn't matter what tone of voice they use. It really is the C word. So when they say that word, it feels like they already stabbed you.
Yeah. That'd be awful.
So what happens, that's a great example, because what happens in that example and the flying example is that fear immediately contracts our world. And so now there's only the world of me in the cockpit who can't even see the runway over my left shoulder, right? And in the doctor's office in the hospital, you know, where I had the biopsy, there's only me on that table with the doctor feeling like I'm going to die an early death. I forget about the bigger picture, because fear has that power to contract, to you know, one of our reactions is to freeze and contract. And our vision literally biologically contracts, so we can't see through that different lens.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we need to do, is look at it through a different lens. And so what I eventually got to, and this story is in my book, is after I had had my first lumpectomy, which, you know, was a try at, you know, they didn't think it would be enough, but I wanted to see if we could avoid a mastectomy. And so after I had the lumpectomy and they told me it was not enough, and I had this trip to Europe planned, to do research on my biological father, who was killed in World War II when I was just a baby, and I was doing research about him partly for this book, which has some information about him in there. And the surgeon said, well, go on your European trip, because you've got to make a decision here, and it's between having a single or a double mastectomy, and you'll get some perspective. Well, I did. Because standing next to my father's grave, he died at 27. And here I was talking to him and saying, oh, Daddy, you're my expert on early death, and I don't know how long I'm going to live here. I wish that you could talk to me about that. And as surely as if I could hear his voice, I thought I heard him say, oh, honey, I don't think this is about facing your death. I think this is about facing your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I learned from that was that, like it or not, cancer seemed to be part of my life journey. And no matter how long I was going to live, 2 months, 2 years, 20 years, however long I'm going to live, cancer is now part of my journey. And if I'm a person who thinks my journey means something, if I have that spiritual belief, then this is a chance to really see if I'm serious. So, likewise, to go back to the flying, which is a little lighter, to go back to that flying, when I'm in Cleo's office debriefing this thing that seemed like a disaster to me, and I'm in tears, and saying, I'm not safe in my own hands if I can't even see the runway next to me, she put it into the bigger context and said, Pam, you're just taking lessons. I just scared you. That's all. And the antidote to being scared is training, so that you automatically, instead of contracting like your body and mind want to do, you actually expand your possibilities, which there are other lessons about that. And so you can become the kind of expert that Captain Sully Sullenberger was when he didn't freeze when the bird flew into the engine, and he thought of putting the plane down in the Hudson River and saved everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't freeze because he'd had all that training and experience. So, you know, I think I was old enough maybe to have some of the training and experience that I've been fortunate to have in my life, you know, play in and help me. But does that mean I haven't been scared of cancer? Of course not. It's also a perfectly normal reaction, and that was what Cleo was trying to tell me, is perfectly normal reaction if I pull the power off for you to be scared. And it's okay. But the point is, you have to manage that fear so that it doesn't take control of you. And so that in my shamanic tradition, we talk about living beyond fear, It's not that we won't have fears, but if we live beyond them, it means that we are the pilot, and we can be flying along, and we can say, oh, I have fear right now. And maybe that's a better phrase, by the way, than I am afraid.
Either one.
Who I am.
Either one works. I think most people. I don't think most people. I think most people say I'm afraid. Most people say I'm afraid right now. But a better way
I know.
To might manage it is. I mean, in reality, I think people say I'm scared, or I'm terrified. Even probably
right.
In the case of having cancer. You know, I don't know if I'm afraid is even going to come out. It's probably stronger than that.
Right.
But then to it's just like my dad. My dad is a stroke survivor since 2004, and he had multiple brain surgeries, and it's part of what my book is about. And in the middle of rehab, he lived through the ICU, which most people definitely don't do. And he went over to rehab to, you know, come out of the strokes and so forth. And it was really unclear whether he was ever going to talk, walk. You know, who knew the damage that had been done with brain surgeries and hemorrhages and things like that. And they wheeled him down for some speech therapy to kind of get a gauge of where he was. And they said, okay, Jim, let's see if you know the alphabet. When I say a letter of the alphabet, you tell us what word comes to mind. And so she said A, and she told us later she was fully expecting him to say A or add or something really remedial. And instead he said aardvark. And then he went through, and said benevolence, courage, determination, excellence, faith, goodness. And it was like the whole thing was this goosebump moment of I'm living through this, and I definitely haven't lost my mind, my memory, or anything.
Oh,
so all of you who think
wow.
I'm dying, back away, because I'm living through this. And it was this just profound moment, kind of like what you're talking about. What I've learned from him is that he's so grounded in faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you were saying that earlier, when something crappy happens to you, or you don't know where you're going to land your plane, or where you're going to get your next dollar from, or your next meal from, or whatever, that grounding in faith is so profound. Whatever
Absolutely.
Whatever it means to you, I don't. Faith means so many different things to different people.
That's
but if
right.
it's your photography, or a church, or a walk, or a flower, or whatever it is, like I seem to be grounded in birds. Gosh, I love birds.
Oh, well, no
them.
Wonder you like this book.
Yeah, I know. I
have a lot of birds
like,
in here.
I love this book. It's cute. Yeah, I'm
all about
be
flight.
Fan. Yeah,
well,
I
Well, you know,
I
birds are
birds.
Messengers from God.
I have birds. My... Oh, are they? Yeah, teach me about
birds.
Birds
have
please.
Always been in different legends and everything considered messengers from God, so...
I'm fascinated by birds. Always have been and always will be.
Uh-huh.
Mother's Day, the kids each got me a bird feeder.
Oh.
So I have four new bird feeders out.
Four new bird feeders. That's great.
Yeah, they're cute. So, all right. I just want to make sure we keep an eye on time here because I could probably talk
right.
to you all day long. So let's move on to maybe the second area.
Yeah. So I'm not going to spend all that time on every lesson, but but let's maybe spend more time on one other one, say. But I'll just tell you a little bit about some of them. and then I'll go to a key one. But number two is bring enough fuel for the journey. So this is, you know, in aviation, if I were going to take you out flying, Elizabeth, and I said, well, gee, I think I filled the tank at the end of the last one. I'm not sure. Oh, well, we'll be okay. You know, you would think of something, other urgent thing that you had to do right now.
Yeah.
In aviation, it's a no-brainer that you bring enough fuel for the journey. You would have to be insane. But in our lives, we fly around on fumes. And so who is the only person who can fix that? It really is the pilot of the plane. It's you. And so in the book, there's a dipstick, which is like a measuring stick that with a scale from empty to full, which is a scale from 0 to 10. And so it teaches you how to use this dipstick as a tool for measuring how much fuel you have right now. So you might think of what number, how much energy do you have right now, physically, emotionally, spiritually, what number comes to mind? And then think to yourself, is that a good number? Is it enough? Is that the number that I'd like to have from all my flying around the world? And what number should be my personal minimum? That is, in aviation, Cleo made me pick a personal minimum. Mine was 10 gallons in that little plane that I flew on each tank. And if it was 9 3/4, then I had to go through the pain in the butt process of filling the plane up, dragging the big hose out and climbing up and unscrewing the fuel cap and spilling fuel on myself, and all, which I didn't want to do. I wanted to cheat, but if I started cheating, it's a matter of life and death. And so we can't fly without the fuel. And so this is a lesson that asks you to think, not only be conscious of how much energy you have and manage your energy, but to think, what is your premium fuel? What is it that really fuels you? Because some of us think, oh, well, I get charged up by being around other people. Well, I love being around other people, but I'm essentially, believe it or not, with all this talking, I'm an introvert. When I need to refuel, I have to be by myself.
Yep.
And it took me a long time to learn that. So that's my premium fuel, and I know things that I can do now to refuel myself.
So that's quiet with my cats.
Well, there you go.
To recharge.
And
I have
taking
to, like,
responsibility.
Watch a movie or something. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So taking responsibility for that, one retreat participant said to me, well, this is revolutionary. This means I'd have to change my life. Well, exactly.
No more going into the office. depends on what's depleting you.
Yeah.
Totally depends, doesn't it? Does that mean wellness, too? Does this part mean wellness and food choices as well? When I think of
Absolutely, that's premium fuel.
That.
You know, are those potato chips really your premium fuel? You know? So definitely it's about keeping your it's about keeping your body airworthy, keeping your body just like it's the pilot's responsibility to go over the airplane. Even though I'm not a mechanic, I can barely change a light bulb, you know, still was my responsibility to go over the airplane and make sure it was airworthy. And if there was something on the checklist that didn't measure up, then I call somebody. I do not take the plane out flying.
Yeah. That's like getting in your car and taking for granted that, you know, it's got oil in it and tires are pumped up with the right air and things like that. That I got to tell you, being married has really messed me up in that score. The car needs to be registered. It does. How do you do that now, 14 years later?
I want it to just take care of itself.
Oh, yeah. It's very funny, though, how sometimes I've just been noticing this lately. I'm like, okay, I need to go back to taking out the garbage. I need to go back to, you know, getting my car registered, changing, you know, taking it for an oil change, things that my husband does that I don't do anymore.
Oh, uh-huh.
Even grilling out. There's certain things he does that have spoiled me rotten, which is really sweet and everything like that. But, you know, the other day it just sort of dawned on me for my son. He's going through driver's ed. And it said, go find the VIN number and the car insurance and the car registration. And I'm like, well, I'll go check the glove compartment. And as I was doing that, I'm like, you know, I just totally took it for granted that he did that all. I didn't even pay attention.
Yeah. Well, with 4 boys, I think it's wonderful that you're getting partly spoiled. So,
well, it is. I know. I'm spoiled rotten. He is the nicest guy ever.
But in a way, what you're talking about is lesson number 3, which is take the pilot's seat.
Yeah.
And that's about, are you waiting for someone else to rescue you around this situation, you know, that you thought of at the beginning of the call? Or are you up for the challenge for this lesson, which is trusting yourself?
Yep.
And the gift of this lesson is finding the soul within and allowing that soul within to be the pilot.
That's a really interesting step as we... I'm not sure, this could be an overgeneralization, but sometimes, like, when, especially women, like when we hit like maybe late 30s and 40s, you know, or maybe as people age, I'm not really sure, feel free to chime in here and clarify, but it just seems like sometimes we do complete shifts in our career or something. Sometimes we have just dramatic changes to kind of regain control.
Oh, I think
I don't,
so.
And I don't know. Sometimes it's divorce. Sometimes it's a job change. Sometimes it's whatever it is. But I just think it's so important for us all to remember the things that we've always loved.
Yes. Well, see, you keep leading me into the next lesson, because lesson number four is remember why you long to fly. And that's what it's about. It's about loving yourself and your journey. That's the challenge. And loving ourselves is, I think, the biggest challenge. In all the years that I've been seeing clients, people have asked me, you know, is there one theme that all your clients seem to share or that you run into over and over? And it is loving ourselves.
Yeah. Self-esteem, picking on ourselves all the time.
Yeah, it's so difficult. And so the gift of this lesson, remembering why you long to fly, remembering what it's all about, remembering what has meaning and what has beauty and truth for you, and the gift of that one is living with an open heart, which isn't something that our culture necessarily encourages us to do, but that's the
spiritual challenge.
I'm sorry, yeah. That phone.
No, it's okay. Don't worry about it. I'm surprised my dog hasn't barked and the doorbell's been ringing or whatever. It's just us. That's the beauty of it.
So, go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say that. Sorry, I'm fighting allergies. It seems like people are masters of beating themselves up in the mirror, especially. You know, oh, I'm not tall, I'm too fat, I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm blah, 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 on and on and on. And then comparing and despairing as well. It just seems like people, I don't know why it's in our nature to do that and not just look in the mirror and go, oh, wow, I'm me, I'm so happy. And
right.
I
see you did it for me again. You led right into lesson number five.
Sorry.
Which, way to go, which is called communicate with the controllers. Okay, so when you're out flying, you know, there's a control tower and there are controllers up there, and their job is really, they're your allies. Their job is to keep you safe. They're trying to keep airplanes from bumping into one another. But when you're a student pilot, you're always afraid of them, because it's like they're the gods in the sky who can see where you are, and they're going to nail you for doing something wrong.
Right.
And so this relates to the part of our being that's always looking for negative feedback. And, of course, and the challenge of this lesson, communicate with the controllers, is dealing with that negative feedback. And it's the negative feedback not only from people outside us, a boss or a spouse or a friend or whatever who seems to be giving us negative feedback, but most of all it's those inner controllers, the ones you were just talking about, who look in the mirror and pick you apart instead of telling you how magnificent you are and how you are fine just the way you are. So
yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah, that's a mastery right there of sorts, because I swear as a girl in this world, something happens where you start out that way, and just people, I don't know what it is, you eat it yourself or people eat at you, or you know, you get enough life experiences under the belt and you know, you just get, so you just don't feel so good sometimes. A lot of people struggle with this. They really just deep down don't feel too great. They try to,
right,
and they do things, and they New Year's resolutions and all these things.
Right.
It just,
right,
you know, at the bottom of it all, or the center of it all, is just giving yourself a big giant break, I think.
You know?
I don't know.
Well, this system can really help you with that.
Yeah.
It can really help you with that. And for the women who are listening out there, know that when you do master that, there is mastery in this. And when you do master that, you heal not only yourself, but you heal all the women in your lineage who came before you and those who will follow you.
Anybody you
touch. So take that as an inspiration, a kind of mission you can take on.
What's the chakra that goes with that one? What's the chakra? I noticed you did that in the book. You put a chakra,
the chakra
in a yoga pose with that one.
It's the throat chakra. And so the throat chakra is the chakra of the voice. And so the gift that goes along with communicating with the controllers is finding your true voice. singing your song loud and clear and true, which is a wonderful joy and blessing.
I'm going to sidetrack this for a minute. I'm going to do this again. I'm sorry. Just to go deeper on that one. How do you think you help? How do you think you find your true voice? It's a deep question. Or how do you help people find their true voice? Does that mean, like, okay, since I was a kid, I've always loved cats. So that's part of my true voice. Does it mean things or a career?
Well, I think it means,
I think it means
being fully expressed. Your soul came here in this body to experiment with a new way to express itself. And by the time you die, wouldn't it be great to feel like your soul got pretty well fully expressed?
Why do people not? So I call, like, I always think of that as that, like, little nagging little voice sometimes that says, you know, I want to be an actor, or I want to be a writer, or I want to be a, you know, I want to live someplace else, or I want to quit this job, or that little, like, that little nag that you ignore.
Yeah.
Like, I always think, like, when you ignore that nag, it makes you sick.
Yeah, it might, and it also, you know, this is probably longer than we have time to talk
about.
I
hear you.
But it, but it's a matter, how I would help somebody with that is by helping them go deeper with that little voice, finding out what that voice wants, what it needs. Like if it's saying, go live by the ocean, well, you may not be able to, on a practical level right now, pick up and go live by the ocean. But if you ask that voice, why do you want to live by the ocean? What would that bring? And maybe the voice would say, well, you'd be near nature and you'd be through something natural and fresh and everything. So that's different. Now your soul wants the expression of being in contact with and being an expressor of that which is fresh, that which is natural, that which is huge, that which is deep, that which is flowing. And we can do that without literally going to the ocean.
Yeah. I'm funny with the ocean. I absolutely think the ocean is beautiful. I love the sound. I love to pick up shells. I love to put my feet in it, but I will not swim in it. Completely freaks me out.
Well, maybe you didn't grow up. I grew up with it.
I am so afraid of things that bite. I get scared, I think, not knowing, you know, what's, I just can't see things or see the, I don't know, I'm funny like that. But I have no idea what that means either, but I think the ocean is beautiful and everything. But anyway, I my favorite thing here in Maine is to go to the ocean and pick up sand dollars.
Cool thing.
They just kind of wash up on the shore here. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
I just sidetracked.
Well,
again,
I'll just mention to your listeners, take a look, for those of you who love the ocean, at my Sand Spirits Insight cards.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Those are a set of cards that that I did that are all photographs of nature's arrangements by the shore, and they were an amazing gift to me in my healing journey from cancer, and they can really reveal your inner wisdom. They've turned out to be pretty amazing.
Do you think everybody has something creative about them that needs to
Absolutely.
Be expressed, whether it's writing or photography, or what are other creative ways to express yourself?
I think creativity, it can be how you approach a problem to solve in business, or creativity can be just the way you admire the color of the vegetables you're cutting up and arrange them on a plate. I mean, I think creativity is not about art. It's about
Very
the way you live
point.
Your life, the way you see your life and the way you approach it. Yeah, so that has to do, in a way, with this lesson number 6, which is broaden your scan. And that's about the fact that when we feel lost, again, fear takes over and we want to contract. You know, we only see, like, two solutions. We tend to say it's either this or that. And when we're creative, what we're able to do is expand on those strategies, broaden our scan, look at what we haven't seen before, what we haven't considered before. And the gift that comes from that is knowing that inside you know the way. you know the way through the challenge that you brought up at the beginning of the call somewhere in you. And so when I work with people, I'm not telling them what to do. How would I know what they should do? I'm helping them remember that they know what to do.
How do you, what if some people really feel like they don't?
Oh, a lot of us feel that we don't, of course. And what usually is in the way is fear and our feeling that, you know, and our mind's stories that we've carried from the past about here you are again, you know, you don't know the way, you don't know what you're doing, why did you think you could do this, you know, all of that stuff, which is a really fear-based aspect of the mind. And so it's about opening the heart and having the heart's wisdom be the pilot, be the compass.
What's the difference between taking, sometimes unsolicited advice, but taking advice from somebody else and listening to yourself? Is there a clever combination of both, or is there a point at which you should just... Because I notice a lot of people in this sort of area, they look outward rather than inward.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that ever works for very long. I think that if you think of all the conversations we've had with a friend where we think, ah, if she'd only listen to me, it's clear to me what she should do. And even if we tell that friend what we think she should do, if she doesn't think that's true, she's not going to do it anyway.
It's like lesson number one in parenting teenagers.
She might do it for 5 minutes just to please you, but she's not going to really do it if she doesn't, if it doesn't resonate. So I think we listen to advice, whether it's from a wizard, a guru, a psychic, or just a friend, anybody, or this program on the radio. You know, we listen to the advice and we take what resonates with us on a deep level, and that's what we should act on.
Would you be upset with someone, Pam, if they said if they were in session with you and they turned around and said, "Well, Pam, well, I don't think you'd ever do this," but but you know, like. Yeah, I guess that wouldn't make sense because you would never tell somebody what to do, would you?
No.
Because there are a lot of people out there who practice, and they're actually telling people what they think they should do. I hear a lot of people say, "Well, my shaman told me to blah blah blah." And I'm like, I want to turn around and say, "Wait a minute. That's great. That
all right,
but hang on.
No,
what
I'll
do
tell
you
people what I
do.
See.
Yeah.
I will ask somebody in a session, would you like to know what I see? And they usually do want to know what I see. And I'll tell them what I see about the situation. But that doesn't mean I'm telling them what to do. I always tell people when I start working with them that I don't have the power to do anything to them. And if I did have the power to do something to them, it would be so inappropriate to use that power because this is their path. So I'm really just an ally. I'm a facilitator. I can open doors for them to receive healing and wisdom from other dimensions that maybe they're not used to being able to access, and I can help them access that. But they're doing the work.
Did you always know that you were this... special and unique and smart and brilliant when you were a little kid?
No, when I was a little kid, you know, I grew up with a mother who was bipolar and alcoholic. She was an undiagnosed bipolar. This was in the days when we didn't know what was going on.
Oh.
And so what I wished is that somebody would invent this big scanner so that you could put a person who's having trouble through this scanner and it would tell you what was wrong. And in a way, that's what the shamanic path is like. It's like having a big scanner. But it doesn't mean that I always know what to do. And so this maybe leads us to the last lesson, which is give way to the winds. So when I have a client, like right now I have a client who has a terrible chronic disease. Well, I'm not a doctor. I'm not... I can't tell her that I can
or anything,
heal her physical symptoms. But do I want to? You bet I want her to have that result. And so, you know, what I do with spirit is I pray fiercely for my client to be healed, for her to be restored to full health. And then I say, and only if it's thy will. Because I'm not in charge of her path. You know, who am I to know that being ill isn't what her path is about? Maybe there are bigger learnings that she's getting from that, and maybe she's not supposed to be restored to physical health, and I'm not God. So giving way to the winds means letting go when you want to be in control. And don't we all want to be in control?
But when we let, nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But when we let go, when we let go and give way to the winds, then the winds can lift us. And so that bird that we look at with a big wingspan, that big hawk or vulture or eagle, when the winds are right, when the winds are lifting them under their wings, they don't have to do anything. They just soar on the wind. They work with the wind.
Now, does that mean to be carefree and unplanned and don't think about it and
not
blow,
necessarily
blow like
I think
the wind?
No, I think it more has to do with surrender. To go back to the challenge that you picked at the beginning, mm-hmm. if you think on some level, can I give it to God if you believe in God, or can I let go of controlling it? So I'll finish with this story, this analogy to bring it back to flying. So when you fly an airplane, you have to practice stalls. You have to practice stalling the airplane and recovering. And stalling means pulling the nose of the airplane up, 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 up until the airplane quits flying. It can't fly anymore. It's so straight up and down. And so the nose, when it quits flying, the nose drops. And all of a sudden you see brown ground through the window.
Is this in a simulator or real?
No, real.
Oh. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So it's very scary at first. You don't like seeing brown ground. And so when the nose falls like that, of course, what you want to do is pull the nose up because you want to go up. But if you pull the nose up, if you continue to pull it up, it deepens the stall and you could go into a spin, and that's the way people crash. And that's why you're practicing this. And so the solution of how to recover from a stall is to let go.
You
let
imagine?
Go of the controls,
oh.
And when you let go of the controls, the plane rights itself, because guess what? The plane was designed to fly, and so were you.
I love it.
You let go and quit pulling on the controls, which is really keeping yourself from flying, you remember who you are when you're whole, and you can fly again.
I love that. I was, the whole time we were talking there, I was thinking of like being the airplane pilot instructor. Just being completely
right.
frustrated.
Yeah,
like,
wouldn't that be
all,
fun?
You know, kind of thing. I mean, and the reason why it made me think that is because last night my son got his driving permit, and it was the first day, and he goes, "Can I drive home, Mom?" And I just like, oh, my God.
Oh, how exciting. What an exciting day in his life.
Oh, it was so cute. And he's such a good driver and everything. But, you know, it's that moment, though, where you wish you had your own brake over on the right-hand side, like the driver's ed instructor, you know, your own brake and steering wheel over on the right hand of the car. And,
yeah, the flight instructor has her own controls on that side.
Yeah. But,
so
but you don't. But once you're in a real plane and you're flying yourself and, you know, you really don't, you know, in my car.
Oh, right.
He's driving.
Right, right.
And so at some point you really just, it's a big trust thing and a big lesson and a big growth moment and a ton of different things. Because there's no brakes
mm-hmm.
and steering wheel over there, and he's a new driver, and we have two new drivers, actually.
That's right.
So. But, you know,
you
had
to give way. You had to give way to the winds
wind.
And say, I sure hope this turns out well.
I know. We're getting home. Well, gosh, you are fascinating. I hope I get to spend more time with you in my lifetime because
thank you.
Completely
I hope so
in
too,
awe.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, I am completely in awe. I wish I had a 3-hour show or many more moments with you. So
thank you for having me on. It's always a wonderful experience to talk about the book, and I hope that it will help people. And
oh,
please
absolutely.
Go to my website for more information. It's throughadifferentlens.com.
Yeah. Yeah, and a beautiful website, too. And then you're on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and Google Plus and LinkedIn and
yes.
all that. There's buttons at the bottom left-hand side of her website to connect with Pam in different ways. And before we go, if you have a couple minutes here, I just wondered if you could talk about some of the other things you do. Yes, you have a book, but people
uh-huh.
can contact you for coaching, consulting, workshops, retreats, webinars, speaking.
Yes. Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. And I'll just mention again my Sand Spirits Insight Cards. And
yes.
I'm also a member of a new, brand new online community that people might check out called TLC. And that's another way to connect. And there'll be more, you know, on my website soon about that if people and on my Facebook page. So you can connect there. And I'll actually be launching an online course in flying lessons sometime probably late in the fall.
Beautiful.
Stay tuned.
Beautiful. Yeah, and I'm sorry my co-host wasn't able to join us. I don't know. She must have gotten tied up with something else. So that happens sometimes. She's a therapist herself and works in a hospital
uh-huh.
setting in oncology. So I'm busy today.
Wow.
Yeah, she's really cool. But I'll introduce you offline to make sure that you connect with Dr. Katie because you guys have a ton of things in common. And
right.
You know, we were talking on an email before we went on air today, and she was like, "Oh, I'm so looking forward to this show." So,
must
have gotten sidetracked with something else. So I apologize there. But all right.
Well thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you, and everybody. This has been Pamela Hale Through a Different Lens, and her book is Flying Lessons. And you can go to her website throughadifferentlens.com and all of the things that we've talked about are on her beautiful website, and again, all the social media buttons are on the bottom left. So thank you, Pam, for being with us, and let me take a look at our schedule here before we go. Tomorrow is my 14th wedding anniversary, so that's exciting.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you. And then on Thursday, we have Shay Vaughn coming on. That is Vince Vaughn's mom. She is awesome and one of my dear friends. I visited her in Chicago and completely raided her shoes and her closet, and it was so much fun. and she rocks. So she has Shaynetics and a new healthy initiative organization that she's launching throughout the country. And then on Friday, we have Marianne Hettinger coming on, who's a filmmaker. So I look forward to the rest of the week, and thank you again, Pam, for being with us. What an interesting phone call, and best of luck with your book, and I look forward to talking with you again if you'll come back.
Wonderful. Thanks, Elizabeth, and thank you for all you do.
Thank you. Thanks,
everyone. All right.
Take care. Have a beautiful day.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.